Hello, I'm Rosie and I'm the radio coordinator at Distorted. I'm on a quest to find out about the ins and outs of all the jobs in the music industry. And today I'm chatting to Rebecca Frank. Rebecca is the content director for KISS and has worked as editor and head of production for BBC Radio 1, Radio 1 Extra and BBC Asian Network. Hope you enjoy the chat.
It chose me. I didn't choose it. I didn't think I'd get back into radio after leaving Radio 1. I wanted to go and do something completely different, but it's KISS. Younger audiences are not currently listening to radio as much as they used to. There is no two ways about it. I've had a piece of advice for my younger self. Ask a few more questions and be a bit more proactive, seeking out wider opportunities.
Hi, Rebecca. Thank you.
Hi, Rosie.
Thanks so much for joining me. I guess let's first and foremost go into why you decided to choose a career in radio.
Wow, we've gone straight in with just, the 2 a.m. question.
Yeah, hard hitting.
Yeah, no, I like it. I don't think I decided to have a career in radio, if I'm honest with you. I know I was somebody when I was in my teenage years was really into music, really into underground music, really into pop music. The only way of listening to music at the time was to buy records or cassettes, CDs, or listen to the radio. And I worked in record shops and I would go to pirate stations in my local area in London and watch my friends DJ and would go to a lot of parties and raves, to be honest. So I was very lucky in that I was a receptionist at a TV company waiting on my gap year to start uni. And they happened to be recruiting for a station called Network X in 2002 at the BBC. Turns out that was called One Extra about 6 months later. But I thought, why not? I'll go for it. Ended up not going to university, actually, just starting a career at the BBC. But I never set out to have a career in radio. I loved the radio and loved music, but it was music and culture that got me into radio, not the medium itself. Although, like I say, we had no other choice but to be into radio at the time. But I wasn't one of those people that had Radio 1 on a transistor radio under the duvet cover growing up. I was into pirate radio, music and culture, and that's what brought me into the career.
So it was music first and the rest followed?
100%.
Just out of interest, what were you going to study at university?
I was going to do Espanol y Portugués.
Very different.
Probably just, well, I'll tell you what, it's good when you're in Ibiza at 3 a.m. trying to order cabs for your team. It does come in handy then now. I just loved earning money and working and just kept deferring university and just didn't go in the end because I was already started to work. I'd love to do a degree one day.
Yeah, well, never say never.
Exactly. I think I would have messed it up at the time when I was sort of 18, 19. I think I would have just partied. But I'd love to be a swotty boffin one day again.
So you got that job. And then what does your pathway look like to them becoming content director at KISS?
I'll be very in a nutshell because I'm sure we'll get into things in a little bit more detail and you can ask obviously anything you want. But the BBC is an amazing place to forge a career in terms of development opportunities, ways to move sideways because it's such a huge organisation. I was very, very lucky to have various kind of opportunities to sort of grow, like I say, and work at Radio 4 and learn speech radio or do things called development attachments, which are where you sort of come off the hamster wheel of what you've been employed to do and go and work in another department for a few months because they want some diversity of thought. Really amazing kind of, you know, development opportunities as well in terms of training. So sort of worked my way up from being a broadcast assistant, it was called then, to being a producer, to being an editor and being in control of a whole part of output, eventually sort of Radio 1 daytime, and then ended up being the head of production, which is not what it sounds like, which is not head of jingles and whiz bangs. It was actually sort of head of everybody that makes content and programmes at Radio 1, 1 Extra and Asian Network. And that was the last role that I did at the BBC. But that's via, like I say, doing like tons of other roles there in other kind of brands and other areas of the organisation. But being in a big organisation like it is at Bauer as well, being able to show curiosity and go for opportunities that might be short term in other departments to grow. Very, very lucky to sort of grow up in an organisation that was all kind of designed for that. But that was, I left the BBC in 2017 and I left because I'd reached that sort of point where in my life, I had been at this one organisation, albeit a very varied career over sort of 12 to 15 years there. I wanted to do something different just on a personal level. And so I left as I was head of production and did some freelance stuff for a little bit in consultancy with various different companies. And ended up being hired by Richard Curtis to work at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, some of their goalkeeper events that they do in New York as part of the UN General Assembly. Ooh. And it was really that transferable skill of making content and making messaging appealing to a lot of people and bringing in my sort of, you know, youth culture and zeitgeist kind of content making sensibility and managing a team. So I did something completely different for a year. Then I moved abroad. Because I wanted my daughter to experience living by a beach for a couple of years and not having to wear shoes to school.
Nice.
Worked in radio down there and then was meant to be there for 2 years. But this job came up at KISS and I went for it and did Skype calls in the middle of the night in New Zealand to get it. And yeah, ended up coming back a year early to do KISS. So quite a lot to cover in terms of how did you end up getting this? But you know, it chose me. I didn't choose it. I didn't think I'd get back into radio after leaving Radio 1. I wanted to go and do something completely different, but it's KISS.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
Yeah. And like, so you've basically learned and had completely different experiences in all these job roles that's blended to be a content director.
Yeah.
On that then, what does a content director do? What actually is your job?
Sometimes directing content, but very, you know, not that much. Look, it's my job to make sure we've got the right people saying the right things and we've got the right content on the right platform at the right time, that we've got really good lineup of presenters, that we've got a really good mix of superpowers in our presenting and production arsenal to make sure we can make great partnerships with commercial brands, that we're doing all of the right events, that we're playing the right music. Like I say, that we're all going through the right brand filter. What is that filter that everyone's ideas goes through to make sure it sounds kind of coherent? You know, today we've launched our Rayo app, which is our new way of listening to KISS and all of the Bauer brands. And it's my job to make sure that the plans are executed right. So whilst I'm not there, I'm not part of the commercial events team actually on the ground working with promoters to get the right things. I'm involved in that decision making, making sure that I'm the kind of brand guardian. But I'm also there out and about having meetings with presenters and agents to make sure we've got the right talent. But I'm also then getting very granular and making sure that we're saying the right stuff and that, you know, we're back announcing tunes enough and that we're sounding energetic enough at the right times. And I'm also sitting down with people working out their development plans to make sure they're happy, healthy and thriving at work. So it's incredibly varied.
Yeah.
And that keeps me on my toes. But at the heart of all of it is culture and people. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, that does sound very varied and a lot to do as well.
Yeah, I'm exhausted, Rosie.
Yeah, I bet you are. What does a day in the life look like then? You've got all these roles to take on, but what does your actual day-to-day look like?
I've got a way of actually answering this question because there's no easy way of answering that because it really is completely different. I'll give you a little snapshot, yeah, of a couple of things this week, if that's kind of helpful.
Yeah.
Tomorrow I've got a meeting with all the content directors from all across Bauer and our new boss, Gary Steen, legend, who's our new group content director across the whole of Bauer. And that's for an hour. And that's where we'll all update each other on stuff going on in each other's world so we can really learn from each other, help each other, spread best practice. Then I've got a one-on-one with the director of music to have a really good chat about how the Rayo rollout's gone, but also just to talk about how we're getting on with music policy and strategy and people at KISS in general. Then I'm driving to Buckinghamshire and I'm actually going to the Costa headquarters to proactively pitch some ideas to them because they sponsor our breakfast show and various other things at KISS at the moment. So I'm going to talk with the commercial team, some of my colleagues on the commercial side of the business, and actually proactively pitch in person to the top bosses at Costa. Then on the other side of that, I've got a meeting with a few of my fellow colleagues from across the business about a staff party on Thursday. So that's what Tuesday looks like, but that's not what every Tuesday looks like. That's got some out of office in it. It's got a lot of commercial kind of stuff. I don't get involved in every single little meeting about every single commercial deal, but when it comes to sort of like seven figure plus kind of clients or people that, you know, we want to kind of continue working on that partnership and building a relationship with, absolutely, it's my role to kind of make sure that's you know, top of the dome. But just to give you a quick snapshot of you know, another day, you know, events, meetings, I'm meeting up with a couple of senior pluggers to talk about their plans for the rest of the year. I've got lots of one-on-ones with my team at the moment because I'm really getting involved in our sort of core product and making sure that the radio is just sounding as brilliant as possible. Various status meetings on projects like our KFC sponsorship that we're doing at the moment. But also I've got an immersion session with Sony Pictures, who are going to tell us all about what they've got coming up over the next year so we can come up with great ideas. So it straddles lots of different things. There's genuinely no one day that looks the same, but I do have regular weekly meetings in with my team and particular shows that I sort of spread with my deputy content director as well. So a bunch of different stuff.
Yeah, so varied. And it sounds so fun. Do you like it being varied, or do you think you could be in a job where, you know, a typical 9-to-5 job?
Sometimes I crave a typical 9-to-5 job, Rosie, because I would love the kind of predictability of that. But I think ultimately, even when I was a show producer, doing the same show or working with the same talent every day, sometimes that got monotonous after a while. That's why often people need to move around a schedule if they're a show producer, which are the people that sort of work with presenters in studios every single day. Yeah. I just think that because what we're doing is reflecting life and culture, any job in our industry, in this kind of part of like radio content production, social, all of that kind of stuff, it's always going to be varied because life is not, we're never playing exactly the same records a year later, unless it's history. We're never, you know, talking about the same stuff. You don't feel the same about how your weekend's been all the time. Like, there's always some kind of level of variation. It keeps me on my toes, and I love spinning plates. I've got really good at dealing with chaos and multiple sort of threads of things going on, and I think that's why I'm in the right job.
Yeah, definitely. I think some people thrive off that, don't they? You're obviously one of them people. I didn't realise as a content director how involved you are with sponsorships. Like you mentioned Costa and KFC. I think I didn't realise there was that side of it.
Yeah, so you know the adverts that play out on commercial radio that just play out like a few times an hour, we don't have anything to do with that. That was all sort of done by some other people over there. But yes, then there's the other side of commercial activity, which is sponsorships and promotions, like, the, you know, sponsored by KFC, or we're doing this cool, funny video shoot today about this fun thing, or we're doing a competition that Tyler's going to do on air, where you got to tell us funny stories and you get to win a prize. Like, all of that level of stuff. We have a daily meeting called S&P, Sponsorship and Partnerships and Promotions. It's at 9:45 every day. Every brand has one at a different time. In that meeting, there are briefs that get brought to the table by different people in the commercial team. And sometimes we brainstorm there and then. It's quite a fast-moving world, the sponsorships and partnerships kind of world. Yeah. And, you know, so today we had a brief that was in for kind of a massive streaming services, huge, like a really big series that's big in America that's coming over to the UK. And they want us to pitch to help support them with it in the UK. So we came up with all of these ideas in the meeting this morning that I'm in, sometimes with my deputy, sometimes I bring in some of my producers, sometimes I bring in somebody from my events team or somebody else because maybe it's got an event activation kind of element to it. Absolutely everything that comes out as Brandkiss comes through me in one way or another, but absolutely not everything to the same level because that would be absolutely impossible. But I would say, even if it's not me personally, it's my sort of strategy or my sort of brand filter that I give everybody to play with. But 100% content is content. There's not commercial content and other content. It's all content. It's all to the audience. It's all Kiss. It's all my presenter's voice. It's all our work and who we are coming out. It doesn't matter if we're selling hot dogs or just talking about what the weather's like. It's all us. So it's really important that content directors are involved in that. And some of my favorite meetings of the day and of the week, because it's really creative. It's first thing in the morning. It's really different every day and every week. You get something different. That's one of the best bits.
Yeah. And I think, well, you have to keep up with trends as well. So every day you see something that's happened the day before, for example, and you try and incorporate that within your content.
Really good point. Exactly that. But sometimes, for example, this streaming service brief that we had in today, that's not going to hit until November, December.
Yeah.
So sometimes you have to kind of go, okay, well, we know this is kind of zeitgeisty at the moment. We know it's probably going to still be a thing then. Right, let's use that as a thing. But yeah, we absolutely need to do that. And by the way, I don't need to pee across everything. I just need to make sure that I've got cool young people that I work with that know about stuff.
Yeah,
but I think the kind of the combination of age and experience and everything sort of comes in. You know, I'm 42 and I'm still somebody that kind of has my finger on the pulse. At the same time, I'm never going to be on TikTok as much as the 19-year-old who works in the social team. Yeah. And equally, we've got to make sure we're not just going, this is big on TikTok, therefore it's sweeping the nation. No, sometimes it's the Euros that's the big thing. Sometimes it's something that's on telly. Sometimes it's just something that's a conversation happening in the country. And we all need to use our shared and different experiences to come up with the best stuff.
Yeah, definitely. What's the favourite thing that you do about your job?
What is the favourite thing? I think coming up with ideas and then them really happening. You know, I think just coming up with a really fun way to reflect things, or something that's going to really bring joy to someone, or something you just think is really funny that you just know the audience are going to like, because you use your sixth sense of what the audience like. Must always have that sixth sense there. So it's not just you and your sort of mates that work in the media. We're not normal people. And it's really important to remember that.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, I've got a 13-year-old daughter, it doesn't mean that what she thinks is cool is the measure of every 13-year-old in the country. Really important to be representative and to always have that filter. But I think it's that. It's just like literally waking up in the morning sometimes and going, that would be really good. That would be really funny. I can totally hear and see that in my little mind's eye. And then really being able to make it happen and then seeing something flying.
Yeah.
Whoa, that's great. But the commercial stuff as well, I have to say, I absolutely love adding partners and commercial partners to the table that, yes, make money. And that's really satisfying to have something very measurable that you're working towards. I really like that. But just, you know, the sum of the parts. So working with KFC on this young person belief campaign that we're doing at the moment, all about all the amazing work that KFC do with young people and making sure everyone knows about it. It's bigger than the sum of its parts. It's not just like, oh, we're just a platform for them to tell their stories. We're coming together and it's like all this third thing appears, this kind of energy that's two brands working together. I love that. I'm going to love tomorrow's Costa meeting as well, because I just know that they're going to build on some of the thoughts that we've got and it's going to turn into something really exciting that we never knew existed before. And yeah. I love that.
And seeing the results and knowing that you did that. Yeah.
That's dead exciting. And when, do you know what? When you're a content director, everything bad is your fault, but everything good is somebody else's credit to have. And I think that's a really important thing, because, like I said, you're involved in sort of everything to different levels, one way or another. So it's important that part of my job is to shoulder that responsibility and to make sure that everyone else gets their flowers when it goes well, because really everyone else does the groundwork and the work.
Yeah. Does the community of radio motivate you? So, for example, you just spoke about your listeners, and when you put something out there, you see the results. Does having that community motivate you to be in your job role? Or is it something
definitely
completely different?
No, definitely. I would say the fact that it's very real world, it's very tangible, it's very now, we can spin on a penny and make sure that, you know, lockdown, I know you've probably sort of heard about this before, but for that sort of particularly the older end of audiences in radio, radio is a very, in lockdown, radio is a very important bit of company, bit of reassurance. It's where information was, you know, very trusted information. Radio is the most trusted medium of media in the world, like hands down. And that makes sense, right? There's like, you can't really mess with it. You can't sort of, there's no filter on it. Like there might be, or there's no sort of disinformation. It is what it is. It's real. Everything we do comes through a real human being.
Yeah.
There's nothing we can do about that. That's just what it is. So I would say yes, when you get that, when you realize that you're sort of something more than just something to have on in the background sometimes for people, that's great. But also the joy of radio and that community is being part of somebody's like life. We don't need everybody's full attention all the time. I think just that side of the community, as well as the hardcore community, is really satisfying, knowing that we can be in the background of a hairdresser's and fill that room full of kind of like joy, or fill it full of like energy or something kind of ethereal. I think that's really powerful. So yeah, it's incredibly motivating to know that people are actually listening and give you feedback and all the rest of it.
Yeah, and that maybe that's something that you can't get from music streaming platforms, is that human element, which I think is great. I think
I just wanted to quickly say on streaming services, like I'm very kind of, you know, we coexist with streaming services. You know, we've got this new app, like I say, Rayo, that's just launched. It's got some incredible on-demand playlists on it that I think kick a lot of stuff that's out there. It's early days, it's day one. But I think because it's been crafted by people that are really dealing with live audiences all the time, millions of people all of the time, I think they're really, really special. And they're very, very tuned in. You know, that said, streaming services are just a completely different kind of offering, and it's almost kind of not worth comparing. At the same time, it's all we're all trying to steer ear time and eye time away from each other, aren't we? But yeah, I think it's just a real privilege.
Yeah, I think there's a growing conversation as well that younger people won't listen to radio because it's all streaming platforms. But when you're thinking about content for KIS, do you always think about young audiences and how that's going to work with them?
I think about young at heart audiences, and I think about 33-year-olds, and I think about 18-year-olds, and I think about everybody. But I think about it in this way. Younger audiences, especially under 25s, are not currently listening to radio as much as they used to. There is no two ways about it. And streaming services and social media and on-demand visual platforms like Netflix, everything, gaming, everything that's emerged in the past 20 years has been part of chipping away at the choice that audiences, younger audiences now have to spend with their time, their thumb, their eyes, their ears, whatever. There's no two ways about it. And the graph shows that people no longer grow into a huge radio habit. So if you started off listening to it this much, you're probably going to listen to it that much in your 30s, 40s and beyond, right?
Yeah.
That said, when we're thinking about attracting people to the brand and spending time with us, it's our job to continually try to fight for all audiences to spend time with us. Whether that means we need to major on other platforms like On Demand, which is why Rayo is in existence, right? So we know that people are listening to more and more stuff on demand. There's an expectation that any kind of audio provider is going to give you sort of on-demand content, not just live radio stuff. We should be doing well with that, with KIS audiences, with a sort of slightly younger demographic. You know, that said, you know, if I just designed radio content and stuff is in terms of like traditional radio content for 18-year-olds, I think we would soon be an incredibly sinking ship because of the medium, it is a bit older. So we try and have that sweet spot. Everybody is welcome to listen to KIS. It's for people, whether you're 18 or 40 or plus, that have that psychographic sort of thing pulling them together rather than a demographic. So more about a mindset. You're probably someone that is young at heart, if you're not really young. You're probably somebody that's into new stuff or knowing what's what in the current world. At the same time, you probably like some throwbacks and all the rest of it. You like energetic music. You like the attitude of the brand, regardless of a sort of age of a person that we're thinking about. But look, there's no doubt that we have to keep fighting for all audiences and especially younger audiences to listen to us for longer. But we know that the battle of people, you know, people who have grown up with all of this choice compared to people that saw it evolving, people that have grown up with all that choice and grown up with streaming services and social media and everything else being normal. I think it's unrealistic to think that we can just keep doing the same thing and expect different results.
Yeah, I think it's trying to see the trend of social media and things like that and go along with it as well, mm-hmm. which I think is great. And I think my fear was when I wanted to work in radio, because I wanted to work in radio and audio since I was about 11 when I listened to Radio 1 and like Nick Grimshaw and yeah, they were my role models. I think my fear was that maybe radio won't exist in the future, so there might not be any jobs. But I think radio is doing a great job incorporating these on-demand services and keeping up with the times, essentially.
Well, that's great that you think that. I mean, you're the expert here. Your voice means a lot more than mine in that regard, because that's an amazing thing to hear that you're bang into it. I would say if radio is going to be dead, you know, is going to die, it should be dead by now. Spotify's been around for quite a long time. YouTube's been around for over 10 years now. Like, these are not brand new phenomena. What they have shown, like I said, is that they chip away all of it together, the ecosystem of everything, the internet being available everywhere. So it's not just streaming services. Like, I never like to be binary and say it's this versus that. Gaming, everything that takes your time away from sort of spending it with radio, it definitely chips away at the amount of hours that somebody might listen to a radio station in a week. But actually a lot of the numbers in terms of the amount of like younger people that are sampling radio stations, you know, is growing. Smart speaker apps like Rayo and other things that our competitors have, you know, these are all, like you say, other inventions to try and buck that trend. At the same time, I think we need to be realistic. And I think it's also about how else can we make sure that these younger audiences are spending time with our brand. So that could be at an event. spending time with a YouTube series that we do, spending time, you know, going to a club night, but as well as listening to the radio. And if we can sort of, frankly, as a commercial business, make sure that we're being successful in all of those areas, as well as maintaining that kind of listen or doing an all right job of it, I think it's a good place to be.
Yeah, definitely. So on that then, what do you think the most crucial trait somebody needs to be in radio as a view to them becoming a commercial director?
I would say that a really important trait is, you know, and I won't swear, but just not to be an idiot and to be, look, what we do is a very social thing. That doesn't mean you have to be a loudmouth. Doesn't mean you even have to be this kind of like person that's got no fear of public speaking. Now, I've got quite a lot of shy and retiring types, believe it or not, I guess. But they're all people who are quite emotionally intelligent because you've got to be able to like key into what you think other people would like. You've also, on the long and short of it, got to be able to persuade people to do things, whether that's a presenter to say something or understand something, whether that's an audience member to come with you on a particular commercial campaign or to buy a ticket or to just listen for a little bit longer, or you've got to persuade a client to spend some money with you or whatever. It's all a kind of game of emotional intelligence and getting into the head of other people. So I'd say my first job, like I say, was working in a record shop. So it was all about talking to kind of customers and all the rest of it. And one of my sort of first legit job, let's say, was being a receptionist. And that was such a great job because I was talking to people all the time, different types of people from different walks of life, different levels of seniority and formality and the type of communication that I had to do. So although I was always quite a sort of confident person, like I say, there's loads of people at KISS that aren't sort of natural, you know, front of the stage type of people who were happy to sort of talk to anyone. But everyone's got a really good way of explaining things or what, they're just good communicators.
Yeah.
And I think being a really good listener, a really good communicator, a good empath, being able to get into the heads of other people, that's ultimately what we're doing for a living, isn't it, in radio?
Yeah.
So I think if you're just somebody that kind of has an agenda and wants to execute it, it's not for you. But if you're someone that kind of really wants to try and make something really popular, or you really want to kind of like help people to see things or buy things or whatever, being a really good communicator and tuning in to other people is a really important skill. Because yes, you need to be good at audio stuff, but you can learn that. And yes, you need to be into music, some roles in radio more than others. And that could be a personal thing or something learned. I think the thing that I really think people need to be more and more aware of in our industry, especially commercial, is people. You need to really care about people and be up for like a bit of psychology and getting into people's heads a bit.
Yeah, definitely. And being nice to people, that's a big one.
I was going to say the sweary version of that, but absolutely. I think that being cool with people on the way up, you've got to build relationships with agents, presenters, production staff. I've got to make sure people want to work with me and want to work with the brand. And if they see something they don't like, it puts people off. There's other places they can go. So being like lots of my big contacts now are, you know, big wigs in huge companies I grew up with, or that, you know, that have just kind of taken other paths, but we might have bumped into each other at something along the way. That's not to say it's a closed shop, because it's absolutely not. There are so many kind of, the roles have got wider with social media on demand and all these other roles in radio that didn't used to exist. Used to be radio producers, radio presenters, that's about it. Maybe some sales. Now there's all kinds of roles that are really interesting, that are creative. So I think there's something for everybody, of just people getting out of their heads a little bit, I think.
Did you have a mentor throughout your career, or have you had a mentor, or did you kind of forge your own path?
I wouldn't say I forged my own path. I don't think anybody completely forges their own path. I think there's always some sort of mysterious, you know, mysterious ways at work all the time. Like I've alluded to before, I've never really planned anything amazing that's happened in my career. A lot of the time, you know, I do try and be realistic to people and say you could do A, B, C, and it could still not work out.
Yeah.
Because there has to be an opportunity available. You have to do a good job in the interview. You know, as with anything, where there are more people that want to do it than opportunities available. And luck, sometimes, I'm not going to lie. But I would say there have been some instrumental people that I've magpied from. And there's also been some people that I've not had a great time with. And those are also, every experience is a good experience when you get through it, isn't it, in life? But especially, you know, professionally, because you learn what type of a leader you don't want to be, or something you'll never do, because you can sort of see and learn from it. And I would say I've been very lucky to just have some amazing bosses and people around me at every step of the way. But I'll be honest with you, Rosie, when I first got into radio, I never felt, and it's only actually been, I'm really going to be very candid here, it's only been until recently that I've really felt part of the radio industry.
Oh, really?
Not because I've not been invited to things or nothing like that. I think just because I wasn't one of those radio nerds that grew up sort of loving that side of it. I loved radio presenting, not personally, but like loved the art of presenting, content making, music, all of that, rather than all the sort of technical side of it, especially kind of not growing up in commercial radio or listening to much commercial radio by Kiss when I was younger.
Yeah,
I always felt a bit like, oh, I don't look like them. There weren't many women, you know, didn't really feel like maybe this is just not for me and all the rest of it. And it's only really, you know, recently when I've you know, the imposter syndrome is still there all of the time, like always. And I don't see that as a particularly bad thing. I think it's somebody said to me the other day that imposter syndrome sometimes can be a little bit of a kind of sign of like growth mindset, that you never kind of rest on your laurels. You always want to stay hungry and get better. Maybe I'll never completely feel slam dunk part of the industry, no matter like where you get to in it. But I don't see that's a bad thing. I think it means I'm always going to be trying to push commercial radio to be something brilliant and different, as well as what everybody knows and loves.
That's really reassuring to know, I think, because it can be quite intimidating radio. You think you have to know how to press this button and how to press that button, but to be as successful as you are and only just feel a part of it, I think that's a really reassuring thing.
I'm so glad if there's one thing that we chop out about there, maybe it's that, because you can learn everything. And I was very technical and I used to DJ and very badly and all the rest of it. It was always just, I think, that thing of this, there was always people who were just so amazing at that I thought, oh God, you know, do you have to be like that? No, lots of things can be taught.
Yeah.
You know, you're clearly a very bright woman and you can learn anything that you want to learn. If you want to put your mind to it, it might take you 5 minutes, it might take you 5 years. You can learn it. It's those other softer skills that I think are the ones that take people from good to great. I've had such, especially here at Bower, I've just had such amazing backing. Like just such kind, good, you know, compassionate people that I've worked with. And that's why I always try and like pay that forward, because I've been so lucky to kind of get so much of that in my career. I had to fight for it as well. Yeah. You know, sometimes you have to like ask for the help or seek out the kind of allies and that you kind of need in life. But I think 9 times out of 10 people just want to do a really good job. I just think having a really good work ethic has always been on my side. Northern Irish parents, you know, I mean, just so getting my head down and getting on with it and making it about the work and not about me too much, but then always making sure I am picking the moment to go, oh, what about me? Can I learn something here myself? But just being about the work and being about the business is just the best advice I could give for anybody, because then everyone will treat you like somebody that wants to do the work and not anything else.
Yeah, you've just said loads of advice there, but one singular piece of advice that you'd give your younger self would be, what would that be?
I would say just, I guess like if I had one sort of to my, if I had a piece of advice for my younger self, I think thinking back to my sort of early BBC career, I think some of it would be to ask a few more questions and be a bit more proactive in terms of seeking out wider opportunities. I was very, very happy and comfortable and safe in growing up in my 20s at One Extra, and I don't regret that for one second. I had some incredible experiences in those days, but I think because I was sort of so loyal to my brand and so loyal to the sort of cult of the brand that I worked for, I think there were sometimes opportunities I probably could have pushed for or could have like asked for or probably could have had a bit earlier on. But you know, I think all of that is a little bit of a confidence thing. I don't want to say any cliches like, you know, just believe in yourself and things like that, because I just think sometimes it's really hard to hear that advice. I don't know, maybe you tell me. I think sometimes that advice is a little bit empty and a little bit like, how do I believe in myself? What does that actually mean? I don't really know what that actually means.
Yeah.
I think maybe just trying to find those like-minded people that are going to help you and cheerlead you. It's okay to have outside help to do that. It's really hard to find that from yourself and within, I think.
Yeah, I think so. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because it's like some people also say, just be yourself. Believe in yourself and be yourself. Great, thank you.
I'm doing that every day. Yeah. What do I actually do with that? Yeah. I guess what some people mean by that is just having conviction, if you've got an idea, like really follow it through. What I would add to that to maybe make it a bit more useful, because I hate advice like that as well, is like if you've got an idea, make sure it's an idea and not a thought. So we should have more female DJs is a thought, right? An idea is something that's really interrogated. Why do I have that thought? How might that look? Can I draw a picture of it? Can I describe it in two lines? Can I pitch it? Yeah. With three pictures and 5 minutes. That's an idea. But find out why, interrogate why. I've got a boss at the moment, Gary, our new boss. He's just absolutely brilliant. I know that if I want to follow a thought, an idea, an action, something that I want him to take notice of or help me make good, I've got to have really thought about it. And I have to do this to my team as well. Why? What's your thinking? What's in it for the audience? Like, do the homework.
Yeah.
Really, instead of, I've got this notion, and that's making the recipient have to do all the work in making that thought into an idea. So is it a thought? Is it an idea? If you've got an idea, great. Do the work though. Back it up properly. Don't make the other person sort of do the work. I just think there's so many opportunities for young people to get off their asses and do it themselves now.
Yeah.
That the barrier to entry can be quite low to doing a podcast or doing anything now, or doing a radio show even to a certain extent. But actually it being like the difference between good, great and excellent are these things. Like, what is good? What's in it for the audience? Don't just have a lazy thought of like, oh, I think it'd be really cool if we did like radio shows from coffee shops. Right. Why? What's in it for them? What does that look like? Tell me what a running order is.
Yeah.
Et cetera, et cetera. I think just really kind of owning it and going for it is something. And I think that maybe is a slightly more useful way of saying, believe in yourself, all of the rest of it. Sure.
Yeah.
Believe in your ideas, but make sure that they're good and well thought out.
Perfect. I'm going to leave it there because that's just the perfect advice. Everything I needed to hear. So thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much for listening. Subscribe to the podcast to catch the next episode. And if you'd like to ask our guests any questions, or if there are any more job roles you'd love to learn about, then get in touch with me via LinkedIn @RosieBlack.